Welcome everybody to another edition of the Thunder Buddies Podcast. Off-season edition Thunder Buddies Podcast. I am here with Barry Trammell and Brett Dawson. Gentlemen.
Hello.
Eric the Red, how you doing?
I'm good. The nights are long because there's no Thunder basketball.
Oh, yeah. Not because I'm staying up late watching the Warriors. I'm going to bed early on that one.
Even the afternoons are long because, shoot, we get to the arena 5 o'clock.
I don't miss the pregame. The very worst thing about the NBA is pregame stuff.
Oh, spoken like a columnist.
Shoot around.
I love the pregame.
You love the pregame.
I need the pregame.
Fill your notebook.
Yeah, I need the pregame. It's necessity. I don't know that love is the right word.
It's redundant. But it is necessary for notebook filling.
If we got everybody at shoot around, if both coaches always spoke when like the home coach could speak at shoot around, we could do away with pregame entirely. If you could get everything out of the way at shoot around, but unfortunately you can't.
Home coach doesn't speak at shoot around?
Correct.
Typically.
Really? So Billy doesn't?
Nope.
Really?
Not D'Antoni this series, remember?
Yeah, I remember that. I just thought that was D'Antoni. Why is that?
In fact, I think, Eric, didn't you ask him first day, are you going to talk? And D'Antoni said, not when I don't have to.
Yeah, and then he took off and he started laughing at me.
Why? Like, but my question is, what's the home?
I don't know why.
Why road coach talks at shoot around, home coach doesn't?
I actually don't know what the distinction is there. I don't know why the road coach does it, but that's the rule. Road coach is to be made available at shoot around.
I don't know why that is either. I just, that's one of those
things. There may be a good reason. I just don't know what it is.
I'm not sure. But maybe we should ask. What have you guys thought since we've been off of the State of the Thunder? We've had some exit interviews. We've had some time to kind of digest the things that were said by Sam Presti and company and some of the Thunder players on the way out. I suppose we can start with Sam, since that was the most fresh thing that's transpired in the last week.
We're communicating about phone chargers right now.
Presti at shoot around.
Presti
at exit around.
I'd love Presti at shoot around. I'd love him more often.
I've seen him at shoot around. That'd
be great. He's been there. He hasn't said anything.
Yeah, availability would be nice.
Presti really buttered up his players Monday.
He has to.
He doesn't have to, except for the guys he's thinking about trading.
He has to.
Yeah.
He has to butter up Steven Adams. Why does he have to butter up Steven Adams? Or Victor Oladipo. He's got him 4 more years.
What if somebody calls and says,
so he's buttering up everybody's trade value.
You gotta lather everybody. You gotta get a good lather on all these guys.
Was he asked about Singler?
That would have been the asset test. Yes. Probably should have asked him about Kyle Singler. What have you thought about Kyle Singler's development since he's been with the Thunder? Well,
here was
the hair's coming in nicely.
My that would have been an interesting thing to talk about. So a friend of mine, shout out to my friend Ryan, who's not one of the million Ryans that works in our department, but who was like distressed, and I think there were a lot of Thunder fans who watched that live stream who were a little distressed about this talk about continuity. And what I told him was, if you put your house up for sale by owner and the first person that comes in to see it, you're showing them your house, you probably wouldn't say, boy, I got to get rid of this house. This thing's got to go. Please, please take it off my hands. And Barry, that's sort of what you wrote about.
Yeah, the roof's leaking. You can't go do that. No, that's a good point.
Yeah, I don't really know what Thunder fans watching that expected to hear other than this guy's good, this guy did this thing, this guy is on an upward trajectory, we're going to be pragmatic, dot, dot, dot. Like, if you expected Sam Presti to come out guns a-blazing saying we're going to trade everybody, like, that's not how the game works. So,
And it's not just that you don't want to decrease people's trade value, but also if you don't trade those guys, they're going to be here in September and October,
yeah,
and you can't have been sitting here in May talking about how bad they are.
I just wonder, here's an example. What kind of a motivating factor would it be if the general manager said, you know, Russell Westbrook had a phenomenal year. It's incredible what he's done for us, for the state, for everybody, for basketball in general. But my God, he's got to play better defense. What would be the fallout from that?
I think people would destroy Sam Presti. but they're going to destroy him regardless.
Yeah.
I don't think maybe Russell Westbrook would think any way of it. He'd be like, oh, well, I'm not going to play defense anyway. I'm just going to come in here and ball out.
What about somebody less staturous than Russell Westbrook?
Steven Adams, hypothetically?
Yeah, or whoever, Enes Kanter. Same exact thing I said, only for Enes Kanter. Enes got to play better defense.
I mean, what did he say about Enes' defense?
It's pretty Captain Obvious.
He said something about it. He didn't say anything like
he said.
Didn't say anything like
tough. He said it's like tough situation for him in the Houston series, that kind of thing.
He mostly just talked about what a good 3-point shooter he's going to be someday.
Oh my goodness!
Get in now, Knicks.
How many times has Billy Donovan mentioned Enes Kanter being a 3-point shooter this year, or somebody's asked him about Enes Kanter becoming a 3-point shooter? It's like, but you're. It's like I understand the thought process behind that because of the way that the league is going, but. This guy does one thing better than almost anybody in the league, being an offensive rebounder. And you're going to take him and put him out there. And when they do take him and put him out there, he's not any good at it. That's not to say he can't be good at it.
He looks like he will be better at it someday. The shot doesn't look bad.
He doesn't miss badly.
Yeah, he misses.
He hits the rim.
Yep, he misses a lot. But
if he played in horseshoes, he'd have, you know, if you give him 1 point.
But I agree with you. I think he's going to be a good 3-point shooter, but I agree with you. He's one of the best offensive rebounders. He might be, by minute, in terms of productivity, might be the best offensive rebounder in the NBA.
Well, the problem I have with these, and I know it takes time. It's a gradual thing. It's not a flip the switch thing. Enes Kanter's a 3-point shooter. Victor Oladipo's a point guard. But they continually bring these things up like it's going to happen, but it doesn't happen. Like Enes Kanter is going to be a 3-point shooter. He could definitely stretch the floor. Victor Oladipo's a guy we brought in with the possibility of being. You know, he could be a point guard option for us, and it never materialized.
That also was interesting by Sam. He brought the Victor, without much prompting, he brought up the Victor as a point guard.
More opportunity in the future, I believe.
That might have been, to me, that was probably the most interesting thing. Is he seemed to be saying, we screwed that up.
They totally screwed that up.
Yeah.
Because the times you did see Oladipo get the ball at the end of the season, for instance, the game where Westbrook was out, and I think Sam mentioned the Minnesota game as a game where you saw the team operate without Westbrook. I think Oladipo had like 8 turnovers in that game. He just doesn't look comfortable on the ball for a long stretch of time. He's not that good of a dribbler. But how do you get any better if you don't have those opportunities? That's what I'm thinking.
That is an important thing. Another thing I thought was interesting that he said, he brought it up, I think, twice. This idea of they used Abrines and McDermott together,
right.
I think more in the playoffs than they did in the regular season. It was the number was close. But he came back to that twice, this idea of McDermott playing the four a little bit, of playing lineups with both those guys together. And I think that speaks to this need to kind of get some shooting around Russell Westbrook. Now, whether that's also a hint that they might be going out and shopping for some more, maybe. But I think... I think it's clear that that's a direction he wants to see them go, is a little bit more. Look, I think for Presti, for the future, McDermott was the piece of that trade that they were the most interested in, because that's a guy on a controllable contract who's a good shooter. Those are Thunder buzzwords right now. So I think there's some sense that they need to get more out of McDermott going forward.
And he stands to take some of Robertson's minutes should they let him walk, which is another thing we'll get to. I didn't have any problems really with what Sam said for the most part. He can't trash some of the guys that he's thinking about trading. And you wrote about this earlier this week, Barry. Like, this isn't the roster that's going to start the season next year. We don't know who's going to be in and out. There are going to be a lot of teams calling the Thunder about potential deals because they know the Thunder needs to improve their roster. And they know that they're going to be limited in terms of cap space because you're going to have 4 guys taking up a big bulk of the cap. I think Kanter, Westbrook, Oladipo, and Adams combined are going to be making close to $89 million of the 101 salary cap. That's, you're not going to have a lot of room or wiggle room in terms of going and getting a free agent, so people can stop these pipe dreams about going and signing somebody outright. It's going to have to be a trade, or it's going to have to be a massive salary dump in terms of, you know, losing guys like Nick Collison and the like. So
I thought that was interesting too. Presti was asked about, you know, cap space for free agents and exactly what would have to transpire. And Sam basically said, it'd have to be a case of someone showing interest in the Thunder and then the Thunder working, in other words, with that team, whoever right. team he's coming from for a sign and trade. You know, for instance, the Blake Griffin dream that everybody has, it would have to be a case of Blake Griffin saying, you know what, I want to play in Oklahoma City, and going to the Thunder and saying, what do you think? And the Thunder saying, well, you're going to have to tell the Clippers you're leaving. And so Blake going to the Clippers and saying, I'm leaving. I want to go to Oklahoma City. They can't sign me. Won't you work out a deal? You can get something for me. Otherwise, I'm just going to go to Miami and you won't get anything. Yeah. So that's how it'd have to play out. So free agency is it's going to be bargain basement. It's going to be the thrifty bin, unless something like that occurs.
They have a mid level, which should be about $8 million. I don't want to get too bogged down in salary cap talk, but there's an $8 million mid level. It's $5 million if you're going to be a taxpayer. They may or may not be a taxpayer, but they can spend that $8 million and figure it out later. The thing about the tax that's important, because people always talk about, are they willing to go into the tax? Will they go into the tax? The signs of people. The tax is at the end of the year. So you could go over and then you just trade some pieces or make some magic happen during the year to get under that tax threshold before the end of next season. So they got some flexibility, but it's going to mean $8 million in this day and age in the NBA doesn't get you a whole lot of player.
I never did understand what you said is right. I never did understand why that is.
I don't either.
You got Carmelo Anthony for 3/4 of the season making $25 million and you trade him at the end. And he doesn't count against your
right.
cap. That makes no sense to me. It should be prorated. I don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. And it's not like they do it to simplify things, because everything about the CBA is complicated.
Yeah, I was going to say it actually complicates it that way by saying that, like, your number, you could get to the All-Star game at the cap threshold and not end up paying the cap the tax threshold and not end up paying the tax. It's very weird.
It's strategic. It's the strategic mastery of loopholes. You have to master loopholes and then be able to, you know, finagle your way in and out of the cap to create space and avoid taxes. And it is ridiculous, but see if the Thunder can do it. What did you guys think in retrospect? The situation that the Thunder is in, they're going to be going into this offseason with little to no cap space. They're going to be capped out because of these increases to Oladipo and Steven Adams. In hindsight, do you think that those guys got overpaid? You know, Steven Adams is going to be making around $24 million next year. Victor Oladipo is going to be making $21.
I'm going to say no on Oladipo, and we'll see on Adams. I don't know. Did we talk about this? Can't remember if we talked about this on a podcast. I read a deal on The Ringer. I think it was The Ringer. A week or so ago. This discussion of 3-and-D guys. Everybody wants 3-and-D. 3-and-D.
Thunder got it. They got their guy.
Good wing defenders who can also make a three-pointer. And The Ringer decided, well, let's just see what people mean by 3-and-D. And they set a parameters. I forgot what the defensive parameter. They had one of their metrics or maybe multiple to determine who was really good defenders on the wing. And they had a list of those guys. Then they made a list of good three-point shooters, and they set the bar pretty low, 33%. That's not a great shooter.
It's below league average.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just so – just
it's real close to league average.
Yeah, just so you're an acceptable three-point shooter. They made a list of those. And then they compared how many guys were on both lists. You know how many it was? 20 guys. 20 guys in the whole league qualify as 3-and-D when we're talking – and we're not talking about a high standard. And the Thunder has one of those guys in Victor Oladipo, and he's well above. I mean, he's a really good defender, and his shooting was much better this year and makes you think he's going to become a pretty good three-point shooter. So for the idea, go get another one or go get a couple. They're not out there, and they're hard to get. So the Thunder's ahead of the curve with Victor Oladipo.
I have always loved the Oladipo contract. I continue to really love it. I just think in the modern NBA where he has great value, he didn't get maxed. He didn't get the most money he could have gotten. I think you get a pretty good deal. It's weird to say $21 million next year and $84 over the life of the contract is a good deal, but it is a pretty good deal in today's NBA. It's also eminently tradable. If you ever decide that there's a big piece you need that Oladipo can help you get, that contract is not going to scare people off.
And he stands to get better, to be frank.
Yeah,
it's not like he's 29.
He's done it every year. He's gotten better pretty much every year. Now, you can argue productivity and all that kind of stuff. And as Presti pointed out, his efficiency this year, he had the ball a little less, but his productivity was pretty similar. He has steadily improved.
Yeah, and you know, first season with the Thunder, adjusting to Russell Westbrook and all that entails. You know, he had a lot of instances where he was basically reduced to being a corner 3-point shooter, and he did that extremely well. He's a guy I think stands to get better. I don't really have a problem with his contract, considering that there are guys in the league that are getting paid just as much, if not more than him, that aren't as two-way as you'd say. A guy like a Allen Crabbe or Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson made $20 million last year. Like, and he's not giving you anything on defense. Nothing. He can be played off the floor. Now, granted, we saw Victor Oladipo shoot very poorly in the last series against the Rockets, but going forward, I think that, you know, people ask for the Thunder to get these perimeter players, these two-way guys, these guys that can do a little bit of everything on the wing, and that's the premium you have to pay for that guy on the wing. The question is Steven Adams, really. You know, there were expectations for him coming out of last postseason that he was going to explode. I went into the season saying, okay, hang on, this team's going to be completely different. They're going to be asking him to do more. So I kind of said, okay, let's – I'm not patting myself on the back or anything, but I think I came in with his averages being not doubled. People were saying 15 and 10, 15 and 11, 16. I was like, come on. Like, that's – and his offense started off pretty well, but it tailed off toward the end of the season. That pick-and-pop floater you saw from him in the beginning of the season wasn't as proficient. He wasn't as proficient in that. The pick-and-roll game and the lob game was negated by certain teams who were packing the paint. Steven Adams has to develop. Sam Presti said that as much, and I'll give Sam Presti credit for that. He said Steven Adams and Victor Oladipo have to be better. And if they're going to be up against the cap, those are the two guys that need to improve because they're getting big money.
One other thing about Adams' numbers, at the beginning of the year, he was an uncharacteristically good free throw shooter, which helped those numbers. I mean, yes, he was getting a couple of points a game. That's a big difference in your average when you're getting two or three more points a game than you would normally get based on your free throw percentage.
He needs
to get back to that.
Here's the question I have about the contract. People have asked me, and it's a legitimate question. What was the – you get a chance to sign Victor Oladipo at the sub-max, as you mentioned. What was the hurry in signing Steven Adams last summer, last offseason, last preseason, to that contract? Why couldn't you wait until this summer? And if he gets that offer, match it.
That's a good question. I mean, he would have gotten that offer, I think. I mean, I think he would have gotten that from somebody else. And so maybe you're just thinking ultimately you're going to have to match it anyway. So why not just go ahead and be committed to the guy that you're committed to? But it's a fair question.
You think this summer he'd get the $25 million a year?
You know, maybe the year wasn't quite what they expected it to be, and so maybe somebody would come in a little – maybe not. Maybe he would have come in a little lower than that. But I bet you somebody – I bet you – if you look at the money people throw at Timofey Mozgov, I mean, you look at the kind of money that those guys can command.
In his canter 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think Steven Adams would have gotten – if he didn't get that max, I bet he would have gotten real close to it. I bet somebody would have offered him that max contract.
He really didn't even get the full max, like the 106 or 105 yeah. that he could have gotten. I mean, granted, it's five to $6 million. But I tend to agree that somebody would have offered them something close to that. I don't know if it would have been exactly that to where he's averaging 20, $21 million a year. But with the way that the league's going, it makes it really tough to justify paying a guy like that who's not going to be stepping out and banging threes on you that much money. That being said, Steven Adams is tremendous defending the pick and roll, and I don't know if that's $20 million tremendous, but it's worth a lot in this league the way that teams can throw different pick and rolls combinations at you, like a Durant or even a guy like a Zach Randolph or something like that.
Let me ask a question. Let's say the Thunder does not sign Steven Adams last summer and do what I was talking about earlier, which is let it ride, let him go to restricted free agency with the clear intention of re-signing, of matching. So he's a restricted free agent right now, coming off the season that he actually did have. How would that season have been? How would we be looking at his season? Which really means how much is the disappointment of Steven Adams based on nothing more than just how much he's going to make in the future.
I think that's a large part of it. And I think that people got way over their skis in what Steven Adams was going to do going into this season based on last year's playoffs. I think people said, okay, Steven Adams, it's time. Double-double. Automatic.
I thought Steven Adams' offensive game did improve.
It did. He improved across the board.
There's two or three things. He had the little hook he didn't used to have. His foul shooting, as Brett said, was better, particularly early. That little one-handed float job thing, 7-8 foot, whatever it was.
Flip shot.
Was better than in the past. So I think he did improve offensively. The reason his numbers didn't skyrocket is what you mentioned earlier, Eric. The paint is packed. And that float, that roll into the basket for a dunk, it's not there all the time. And it was when Kevin Durant was here, it was there.
Aside from field goal percentage, Steven Adams improved in every statistical category from last season. This is another question I have. The same way that we look at Russell Westbrook and a lot of people look at his MVP candidacy or whether or not he had a good game, we've been distorted by the numbers. People look at Russell Westbrook as having this MVP candidacy because he averaged a triple-double. And Billy Donovan mentioned this before. If he averages 9.9 rebounds and 9.9 assists, does that make him any less of a player? If Steven Adams, he averaged 7.7 rebounds per game this season. If he would have averaged 10 rebounds a game, would that have made him any better this season than he was? You got to think about it this way. He gave up a bunch of rebounds to Russell Westbrook this year.
Yeah.
At least two a game, I would say.
Like
one on foul shots and one in the run of play.
There were times where you could tell he wasn't there in terms of his defensive connectivity. He admitted that at times. On offense, he's still going to be a work in progress on offense. Look, if people feel like he has to justify making however much money he is by averaging a double-double or scoring 16 or 17 points a game, I guess that's fine, but I just didn't go into this with the expectation that Steven Adams was going to be that kind of player anyway. And then to add to that, you've got the triple-double chase, which kind of negated some of his numbers to me.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to make excuses for him offensively because I do think you're right. His trajectory was – people probably, including me, probably overstated what his trajectory was going to be. The hand at the beginning of the year, I don't know. There are times even late in the year where I see him shake that hand. I don't know if it was ever totally right. I don't know that it wasn't. I don't know that it was a big issue, and I don't know that it wasn't an issue. But I think that probably didn't help his development because I think there was a period of time, if you remember, there was that stretch of time where he could barely catch the ball. He just his hands looked totally different.
No excuse on those. He's got to pull down those rebounds where they touch his hand. There were some games where he and Taj Gibson just weren't getting their hands to ball. They were getting their hands to balls, rather, and they weren't corralling them, and that's just got to stop. Yeah, they got to pull those in.
Yeah, there's no question. I'm saying I think there was a time at the beginning of the year where even just offensively he had a hard time catching the ball. And I think that some of that was at hand. I don't know how much it lingered. It might be that he got hit on it a couple of times during the year, and that's why he was holding it or shaking it. I don't think it was a season-long issue. But I don't think it helped him in terms of his offensive development early, that was a thing.
So this is the answer for me to the Steven Adams contract thing. Is he overpaid? Yes. Are a lot of guys in the league overpaid? Yes. Is Steven Adams overpaid relative to his age and trajectory? I don't think so. I think he's about where he should be. Especially when you got guys making $20 million a year that are on the back end in terms of their age and there's no upside. You know, we see a lot of guys in sports, particularly sports like baseball, get paid for past production. I don't think that the Thunder has done that in most instances with their young guys. They're paying for this future production. And there's a lot of teams that pay for this past production and they get burned for it. And, I mean, would it have been ideal if you can get him on a shorter deal? Maybe. But again, and when the cap goes up in a couple of years, these are going to look a lot better. Oladipo, completely justified. Adams, you can debate that until he becomes the player you want him to become, but the market would have paid him this much money, I believe.
Well, it's I can say this. Is he overpaid? Probably. Does the thought of playing anybody any good without Steven Adams to guard the pick and roll send me screaming into the streets in terror? Yes.
You're rolling his canter out there. See what happens.
You know, here's the other thing about the Adams contract. It does look better if you are not a team that is paying Enes Kanter $17 million. And that's not bagging
that's
on Enes Kanter.
No, that's a good point.
I'm just saying
$42 million.
That's a lot of money in centers in 2017.
Yeah.
It does look a lot better if you didn't follow a bunch of three-point shooters in the Houston series and send them to the line.
It looks a lot better if you played Houston, if you'd played Memphis or San Antonio in the first round and play those guys together. I mean, we saw in game one of Rockets, Spurs, the Thunder just got a bad draw is what the Thunder got. If they could have played somebody else, if they'd have played the Clippers or the Grizzlies or the Spurs, and not Spurs, they wouldn't have, or the Jazz, I mean, in the first round. I mean, I actually, looking back on it, I think the Thunder played pretty well against Houston. It was just a tough draw, and Houston's really good, and they just, they dropped three out of four close ones, and the season's over.
Oh, given the way Memphis played against San Antonio, I think it's reasonable to think the Thunder might have been in a long series there. I mean, I think
with Memphis?
With the Spurs.
Oh, with the Spurs. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think they'd have done better against the Spurs and the Rockets.
Yeah, I was completely wrong about the matchups going into this postseason. I thought the Thunder had a chance to I wouldn't say I was completely wrong.
No, they had a chance.
I thought the Thunder had a chance to compete with Houston. I thought they did. Houston's just got a better 1-8. They stretched the Thunder out. They fouled too much from three. Lost some games in terms of rebounding they shouldn't have. But with the Spurs, I thought that would have been a really compelling matchup. And I thought Houston would have been a better matchup for the Thunder, but I was completely wrong about that. The Thunder can mash with the Spurs. And they would have created some matchup problems for the Spurs for sure, particularly since LaMarcus Aldridge looks like he's on another planet right now. But that was just one game. So.
I will say this. The team I thought that they would match up pretty well with, because I wondered about their just playoff fortitude a little bit, was Utah. And Utah played like a team that belongs in the playoffs and has been in the playoffs and has been making plays. I mean, they were really good. I was probably wrong about that.
Yeah, and the Clippers didn't really. The Clippers had some issues too.
Griffin is a big issue, sure.
Blake Griffin not being there. Joe Johnson played out of his mind. I feel like the Thunder would have been able to say, all right, let's stop all this Joe Johnson nonsense. Andre, get out there.
Yeah.
or even Taj Gibson or somebody. I mean, the Clippers don't really have that kind of caliber of guy that can step out and stop a guy from when he's hot. And golly, I mean, Joe Johnson's 6,000 years old, and he was putting away the
Clippers always have Clippers. Issues. They always have issues. I heard a good rumor today, since we're talking about Clippers and Spurs and Western Conference.
Clippers rumor.
No.
CP3 to San Antonio.
Makes a lot of sense.
That would be
fun,
man.
Be fun.
That'd be fun for San Antonio.
Yeah,
I don't know about for the Thunder.
No, I mean,
or anybody else.
Or anybody else.
I have this outlandish dream scenario in which Chris Paul ends up in New Orleans, but that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But I would love that from a narrative standpoint of like Chris Paul goes back there. And then, Chris Paul playing with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. It would be fun. It would be fun, but I don't.
There might be a lob or two. It's possible there would be a lob or two.
A few. Dwayne Dedman probably licking his chops right now. Please, lob. Lord Jesus, send Chris Paul here.
Lob Parrish.
Lob Parrish. Oh, you're talking about New Orleans.
New Orleans, yeah. He would throw some lobs in New Orleans.
Lob Parrish. St. Tammany.
Yeah, lob Mission.
Let's get to a couple of these guys we're going to be talking about this week. If the folks out there listening don't know, we're starting our Thunder Player Day series. Just basically doing a season review of all the Thunder guys and kind of wrapping up what's happened and what's to come. And we started this week. Brett wrote about Alex Abrines, so we can start with talking about him a little bit. What did you guys think of the debut season from Alex Abrines, the young Spaniard?
I thought, first of all. Uh-oh, this is very embarrassing. I can't remember which one of you guys wrote the Alex Abrines story.
I wrote the Alex Abrines story.
I enjoyed it because it's difficult this late in the year to tell me something I didn't know about these guys because I read so much and I'm around them so much and all that. But I thought the story was very good and enlightening in the fact that the Thunder believes that Abrines is sort of fearless and sort of, to me that's interesting and encouraging.
There was a lot of talk about that. A lot of guys would say that, and people around would sort of hint about that too, that he's just sort of Eric, you know this too. He that dude believes in himself. That guy believes in Alex Abrines.
There's a general. I really hesitate to describe Alex Abrines because I don't want to put him in this box of like Europeanness.
Yeah,
and I really don't like doing that to people. But when you talk to him, I can't really tell if it's his sense of humor or if it's just his personality. But he's very nonchalant and like just like meh. You know, and he just makes, he'll say, I'll be like, so what did you think of the atmosphere? And it was okay.
Laissez-faire.
He's like, I played, you know, when I was in Barcelona, I played in front of, you know, people yelling. Not that big. Yeah. Everything's just kind of, but that's the kind of attitude that he brings to the team that I think is going to make him a good player. And you saw that in certain games this season and even in the Rockets series. You know, it was a stretch of like 8-0 that really put that final game away in the fourth quarter against the Rockets in game 5. But in that stretch, you know, it was the good and the bad of Alex Abrines. He fouled Lou Williams from 3, put Lou Williams on the line when they're tied 81-81. Then the next possession, I think, or maybe it was a couple of possessions, Abrines comes down and tries a left-handed dunk.
Yep.
And you're like, whoa. Yeah. Like, whoa, Alex Abrines, like, that was bold. And he missed it, and then, you know, Rockets get on transition, game over. But it was the willingness to try that gives you, you know, kind of optimism about Alex Abrines going forward. Like, he just fouled a guy from 3. The Thunder have been doing this all series. I'll just go down and try a left-handed dunk. No big deal. Alex Abrines. Like,
what I liked about – I like the idea that, like, you know, he's coming from – and everybody talked all year about he's got to be physically stronger. He's got to do that to compete defensively, and that's a big focus for him. It's always going to be a focus for him until that happens. But I like that everybody talked about the adjustment and how difficult it is to go from Europe to the NBA and the style and everything. And I love the fact that in exit interviews he said, it took me like 2 or 3 weeks to figure out the way they play here. It was so great.
I like that he doesn't throw a lot of cliche stuff out there, like the things that you the European media is very they're very straightforward with their questions, and I think that players are very straightforward about their answers. Yeah. It's a lot more candid back and forth between European media and players. And I picked that up just following soccer throughout my entire career. If you look at like soccer headlines, they're it's not that they're salacious. They're just blunt. They're just like, I don't want to play here anymore. Whoa! You can't say that in the middle of the season, dude. Like, y'all play 2 games. Or like the coach is like, this guy cannot do this. And you're like, Jesus, like Billy Donovan would never say that about in his canter or whatever, even though we know his defense stinks.
All Europeans are Paul George.
Yeah, they're just like blunt, and you're like, whoa, like if the NBA had a European team, that team would have the best headlines.
I promise you. It would be a fight to go cover them. Everybody here would apply for the job in Barcelona.
It'd be fantastic. But like, I think that's what made Alex Abrines refreshing, and that makes him a positive going forward for the Thunder and a guy that's a keeper because he's the exact kind of it's almost a Golden State-esque kind of confidence that comes to him. You know, Klay Thompson takes terrible shots, but he keeps taking those terrible shots, and then eventually, you know, a high percentage of them are going to go in, or Steph Curry just doesn't have any conscience when it comes to distance. And Alex Abrines has that kind of I'm not going to say ability because those guys are all world all-timers, but Alex Abrines has that kind of confidence to be able to keep you in games in this 3-point era we're in.
He doesn't shy away from the shot.
No.
And also, you throw him the ball with 15 seconds left in a tight game, he'd be more than happy to shoot it.
And it's not a Norris Cole doesn't shy away from the shot because Alex Abrines can actually make them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. He was a legitimately good 3-point shooter. And, like, I don't want to overstate his youth. He's 23. He's not as young as some of these other guys. He's like Buddy Hield in the sense, you know, he was a seasoned guy. He hadn't played American basketball as much, so that's an adjustment. But he's been around a little bit. You'd expect a guy like that to be a solid player at that age. But he's a legitimately good 3-point shooter, and he got off to a bad start shooting the 3. After that, he had one spell where he wasn't very good. But other than that, he was a really good 3-point shooter over the course of the year, and you would expect him to only get better.
And as Barry said about your piece today, teaching us something we don't know, I didn't realize that Alex Abrines shot the 3 better on the road than he did at home. That's huge.
Yeah.
Because these guys, these young guys on the Thunder stunk on the road this year. And Alex Abrines was one of the few who actually didn't. So credit to him for that. Now, his defense stunk, of course, but we expected that coming in.
He works at that. He tries. And I think, like, the one thing we noticed, I think we talked about this during the year, Eric, and I don't remember if we talked about it on a podcast or if we just talked about it. He's 6'6 or so, and he's longer than you think he is. He'll block a shot occasionally. He'll challenge something you don't think he's going to challenge. I think there's some things about him that make him give him the potential to be a much, much better defender than he is. And I think he tried. That's the one thing. I'm not a believer. You know, people will say, oh, defense is all about effort. That's so stupid. Stop saying it. It's not all about effort. You got to be good at it. It's not just trying hard. If it was trying hard, anybody could do it. Everybody can try hard.
Enes Kanter be able to do it.
Exactly. Enes Kanter tries hard. He's just not a good defender. Abrines tries hard, and I think he's got some room to grow. He's not there yet.
Next up, today I'm going to be writing about Andre Robertson. And he's one of the guys that's going to be really important to the Thunder, not just, you know, defensively, but he's up for restricted free agency. And he was one of the three who didn't get re-signed along with Adams and Oladipo. Adams and Oladipo got re-signed. Andre Robertson didn't when the time came at the beginning of the season, the deadline to re-sign these guys that could be up for the extensions.
What do you think the Thunder offered Andre Robertson?
Well,
last offseason.
You know, from what I've heard and read,
or heard,
Brett's over here making hand signals, 10. Robertson's group wanted 12. Obviously.
So what do you think? The Thunder came under that, of course.
Obviously, the Thunder came in under that.
8 to 10 somewhere?
This is my question. What did the season that Robertson just had, the entire season, game one to his free throw fallout, in the Rockets series, what did that do to change the numbers?
I don't think you can let it change the numbers a lot. He's an elite defender. And speaking of stuff people should stop saying James Harden scored points so he's not good at defense. Stop it. Stop it now. Make yourself seem like an intelligent basketball
player.
There's a debate to be had about Andre Robertson, and this is the debate. The debate is that this is a team that needs offense on the wing. It lacks scoring punch there, and so what is the level of money you want to commit to a guy who is not going to help with that problem? The question is not whether his defense is worth getting paid. It absolutely is. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. But that is a legitimate question. If you want to make that debate, I'll listen to it about whether you can afford to pay 12, 13, 14 to a guy who's not going to score.
The question is how much is defense worth in this salary cap that we're at, the $101 million that people get to spend. How much are people willing to spend for a guy who's essentially one-dimensional? And I'm going to go ahead and I didn't call Andre. I made the question clear to him that I wasn't calling him one-dimensional when I asked him that question at exit interview days, because I don't think he's a one-dimensional player, but he's 1.25. He's 1.5, because there are times where teams are simply just still not paying attention to him on the perimeter. He's passing up wide open jump shots. We know his free throw woes. We've been through that. When he's cutting, moving off the ball, running the baseline, getting those passes from Russell Westbrook on the baseline, getting some layups, he can be an effective offensive player, but he's still limited. And what is the worth of a guy that does what he does? And we're about to find out.
And on top of that, Mike D'Antoni showed that if he's bothering you, if he's wreaking havoc on your team, there's a way to get him on the bench. And I wonder about the free throw disaster in the Houston series, 3 of 21. What does that do to his marketability? Because, you know, it doesn't sound like there's much momentum to change the rule. Sounds like the DeAndre Jordan is the hacking's still going to go on if you want to.
I'm going to tell you, by the way, that if the Houston series results in any rule changes, it's not going to be that one. It might. It might change some rules, but it's not going to be that one.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, I think that Andre – I think I sort of agree with Brett that I don't know that there's a massive change from the summer.
There is. I don't think there is.
But what is the number? And I can tell you this. Remember, the ESPN crew thinks it's going to be pretty high, because they debated whether Andre Robertson's going to get $15 million a year.
Look, he's not getting 15. If he wants 12, if he wanted 12, maybe this season got him that $2 million bump.
That's what I think. If you were offering 10, and I'm not saying they did offer 10. I'm not reporting that. Barry said, what do you think? What's your guess? My guess is they offered him something like 4 at 10. And if that's what you offered and they come back and four at 12, that's not, to me, that's very much negotiable. You could swing that if you want to do it.
You know, and Brett, you mentioned a guy, Solomon Hill. You always kind of reference back to that Solomon
Hill.
He's
the guy.
And, you know, I was just looking at the numbers on him and some of these other guys, like a Mo Harkless or a guy that's in that range. You know, Solomon Hill made $11.2 million last year. Courtney Lee, another guy who's kind of that, clearly a better shooter than Andre Robertson, older, but he made 11.2. He and Solomon Hill basically have the same contract. Guy like Robert Covington, he's going to be making $1 million next year. He's kind of the small forward defensive comparison that people put Andre Robertson in that group. And Robert Covington scored 12.6 points a game last year.
He's not going to be making $1 million for much longer.
No, he's not. But is he going to be
on
making
that 3-and-D list?
Yeah, he is.
So he's going to be cashing in.
And he's a career 36% three-point shooter. You'd imagine he'd make more than Andre Robertson. So Andre Robertson's going to be overpaid. It's just a matter of how much. I don't think it's going to be 15.
And if it is, I would say more power to you, Andre. Enjoy wherever they're giving you 15. I think given what you've just paid out to people in extensions, given what you're going to need to do to your team, I would say at 15, it's probably time to part ways.
Look at it this way. Okay, this is Maurice Harkless. He's 23 years old. Career average going into this season was 6.7 points per game. He's a 30% career three-point shooter, and he got 4 years, $40 million. That sounds like Andre Robertson range to me. Yeah. And he's a better defender than Maurice Harkless.
He is.
But 30% for three.
He's not a 30%.
He got 4 years, $40 million.
Yeah.
Here's my question about Andre Robertson. We've talked a lot about Oladipo. We've talked a lot about Adams, their improvement. We used to talk about Andre Robertson that way in his offense, his shooting. We stopped talking about it this year because we said he's regressing, he stinks. It might be unsaid that he's not ever going to get better. But can he get better? Can he reverse the downward trajectory? I for my report card, I sort of studied the numbers. His problem on three-pointers, now I don't know what his foul shooting deal, that's mental, but his three-point deal, he couldn't make one from the corner. He's better from the wing than he is the corner, which is kooky. Nobody's that. Everybody shoots better from the corner, but he's 22% from the corner. So,
22 from the corner is not good.
No,
that is
it's terrible.
He might have had a higher percentage of hitting the side of the backboard.
He'd been in the 30s. He had 36, I think, last year. If he could shoot 35% from the corner, then it's a completely different player.
That was the Thunder's – that was what they hung their Andre Robertson progress on the corners last year. And going into this offseason, it's like he shot this much from the 37% from the corner. It's like, okay, cool, progress. Nope, regression. He comes out of this season, like you said, struggling from the corner. So
now here's a way Andre could be even more valuable. If the Thunder does play a lot more small, more Doug McDermott, Jeremy Grant at power forward, well then – what that means is power forward on defense, but they're small forward on offense. Andre could become your power forward and not have to be out there on the wings a lot. He could be more running around the baseline and in the paint, wherever. So if the smaller they play, the better off for Andre Robertson.
Presti said something I think significant the other day in that he pointed out, right, he said – Andre, every indication is that Andre loves playing here. And then he said, if it gets to the point of an offer sheet, that decreases the chances. And that was like sort of just said that sort of off to the side. It was kind of just thrown in there. But I think the message there is pretty clear. Let's get something worked out and not get to this. We've talked before about how they don't like to get to free agency, to restricted free agency. It seems to me they're going to try to get something done before somebody else comes in.
Can they can't do anything until July 1st, though, right?
No,
but they could.
But he can just sign with them. He doesn't have to get an offer sheet.
Right.
Like the restricted free agency means if somebody makes one and he accepts it, then the Thunder can match. But he doesn't have to accept one from anybody else.
We've been down offer sheet road before with Dennis Kanter, so I don't think the Thunder wants to go there.
Well, Andre's going to be fascinating come July 1st. That's going to be interesting.
And you see, and I keep thinking back to this, and clearly two different players, but you'd say Deion Waiters is a better all-around player than Andre Robertson. This is a guy, Deion Waiters, we thought was going to get, an eight-figure per year salary last year, and he couldn't get a sniff.
Why do people say that? That Deion Waiters is a better all-around player than Andre Roberson?
Because he is.
Is he?
Andre Roberson's balance is tilted heavily. I mean, all I'm saying is this.
The Cavaliers literally just didn't want him anymore. The Thunder didn't. It's not that they didn't want him, but they were willing to let him go for nothing, virtually. And he's on the open market, and literally no one was that interested. So at some my point is, at some point, to be valuable, you sort of got to be wanted.
But this is the thing. How many people are going to be interested in Andre Roberson at the price that he and his representatives are asking if you can play him off the floor? You're not going to be as much of a quote unquote headache as Deion Waiters was. There wouldn't have been a situation in this year's playoffs where they were saying, "All right, let's hack Deion Waiters and get him to the line," though he's not even a good free throw shooter.
No, that's true. I'm just saying that you wouldn't necessarily be upset if he didn't get off the floor. Apparently. I think he's a solid player. I'm just saying, I think Andre Roberson is very valuable. And the answer is, that defense is hard to find. The Thunder's going to have a big hole. Brett's right, they can't pay him $15 million a year. But if he's not here,
I don't know if
that's going to be a big hole.
I don't know if they can pay him $12.
Well, they might not, Ken. You're right. They might not. That's why
I say I think 12 is negotiable. I think you can work around with 12, but I don't know that you can. That's a negotiating situation.
All I'm saying is that's going to be a big void. It's not going to be like Kevin Durant.
Right.
But it's going to be like Serge Ibaka. I mean, they've sort of had to.
Look, if
readjust without Ibaka, they're going to have to readjust without Roberson.
If he's not there, it's like, turn them loose. Let Doug McDermott and Alex Abrines start launching because you're going to have to outscore some people.
If the Thunder hypothetically had a guy like they can get back or bring back in Tabo, and we know that Andre Roberson is a better perimeter defender than Tabo.
Tabo's still good, though.
But Tabo's still good.
Boy, I love Tabo Cephalosha.
If they could bring back Tabo and Andre was saying, I want 12.
Well, yeah, if you can go get Tabo Cephalosha for $5 million, sign me up for it. I love Tabo Cephalosha. He's one of the all-time greats.
Also, if you could trade for Jimmy Butler, cool. But I don't think you can do that. Like, I don't think you have the assets. But if you had Jimmy Butler,
well,
now you're starting Jimmy Butler. He can take on some of that stuff, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do that.
Tabo Cephalosha is a free agent.
Bring back Tabo.
He made 3.8 last year.
You got that mid-level.
I love Tabo Cephalosha. I do indeed.
All right, we're going to wrap this one up.
That's a good way to wrap it up. You got me fired up. Not very often you guys get me fired up, but if Andre Robertson's leaving and you're bringing back Tavo, then I've gotten, you know, in the middle of the year, I saw one of those internet deals. Somebody did a big a statistical analysis of the best defenders. At the end of the year, Andre was like second in the league or something. But in the middle of the year, Tabo Cephalosha was like first or second among wing defenders. He still has it.
Yeah.
He's still
capable. And he'll hit more shots than Andre Roberson, I'll tell you that much. Thanks for joining us again, everyone.
It's been a good pod.
We will see you. We'll try to get together at the end of the week and get a few more of these exit interview guys out of the way. But until then, thanks for joining us and see you.